Item 10, Andrew Sturgis requests for approval to license and locate 4-pound nets along the Eastern Shore.
You think it's a worry?
You should. This is a public hearing to consider 4 applications from Andrew Sturgis of Bellhaven to license and locate 4-pound nets on the bay side of the Eastern Shore. We have received a number of public comments during the comment period that were in opposition to the placement of these nets. Specifically, we received 6 letters and 1 petition containing 111 signatures that were opposed, and we attempted in the evaluation to summarize the negative comments that we received in those documents, and there were 6 of them. One, the nets will affect recreational fishing in the Ocahonic and Nandua Creek area. The pound nets will be a navigational hazard to boaters, particularly in low light conditions. 3, pound nets detract from the beauty of the shoreline. 4, the area near the mouth of Craddock Creek is one of the few speckled trout fishing areas on the Eastern Shore, and a pound net would be destructive of fingerling trout in the area. 5, one of the nets, pound net number 1, will enclose an area that's also bordered by a sandbar, and that in so enclosing it may entrap dolphins and turtles, and boat traffic in and out of that area would be cut off except during the highest of tides. Number 6, proposed pound net number 4 will hamper access to the Turner family's cabin by boat and is a navigational hazard. These situations are, in many cases, difficult for staff to evaluate because there's no specific guidance in the code as to what constitutes an incorrect location for or an improper location for a pound net. Prior to the adoption of the Commission's regulation on this issue, which sets up the public comment process, the only conditions that a pound netter had to meet to set his net were that they weren't placed in a marked navigational channel and that they weren't placed too close to an adjacent pound net. And as long as you met those simple standards, you could locate a pound net anywhere as long as you paid the license fee. So the commission moved from that set of standards to one that's described in regulation that requires you to evaluate the pound net's effect on things like water quality, submerged aquatic vegetation, fishery resources, tidal wetlands, adjacent properties, and other reasonable and permissible uses of state waters. It has been staff's sort of philosophy on these that a pound netter in general ought to be allowed to place his net anywhere he wants to, unless one or more of these conditions listed in the regulation is overwhelmingly violated. I mean, we want to be more permissive than oppressive. And so it's difficult in that most of the public comment that we get on these issues is of a general nature. This net's going to affect recreational fishing. Well, you know, that's sort of a broad statement that's difficult to prove. We do know, for instance, that the total number of pound nets in Chesapeake Bay is capped. Can increase. So the 4 nets we're talking about here are not 4 in addition to what we've always had. They're nets that are being moved from another location to these locations. When we hear comments along the lines that the pound nets will be navigational hazard, again, that's sort of a general complaint. Well, any fixed net, you know, placed in the water constitutes some hazards to navigation, particularly if you're not boating properly. And in the nighttime, they are difficult to see, but there's no requirement in the code a regulation that pound nets be lighted at the night. That's a, really a U.S. Coast Guard issue. Pound nets detract from the beauty of the shoreline. That's sort of in the eye of the beholder. I mean, you can argue both sides of that equation. Nevertheless, we looked at this in as much detail as we possibly could, and we've provided you with a number of maps in your evaluation showing where these nets are. And one thing we always look at is submerged aquatic vegetation because of its importance as a specific habitat in the bay for a variety of creatures, the blue crab not being the least of them. And so we had our surveyors look at the proposed locations of Mr. Sturgis's nets relative to existing submerged aquatic vegetation beds. And we think two of these nets are located in SAV beds, and we think that does rise to the level of a significant concern by staff. This is the location of the first net, just north of the mouth of Aconic Creek, and the green area, the hatched area that you see here is existing SAV beds, and the net is wholly contained within that bed, and that would be a concern to us. And I can tell you that there are other maps of SAV beds in your evaluation that show the degree of coverage of SAV, so that this area here, based on 2009, is 70% SAV. This area is 40% density of 40%, and this area out here is less than 10% SAV. Anyway, we would suggest that you not approve this net because of its location. If there's a possibility that the net could be moved offshore in this location or somewhere along here, that would eliminate our objection. This is net number two. There are some small beds of SAV in the area, but not directly under the net. We think this net's okay. We've not really heard any specific complaints about locating the net in this area. We would recommend it for your approval. Net number three is at the mouth of Craddock Creek. And again, it's outside of the SAV beds that you can see depicted there. I don't think it, because it's located so close to that sandbar, I don't see it really affecting navigation any more than the sandbar does itself. We would recommend it for your approval. But then when you get to pound net number four, we're back in SAV beds again, which is a concern, and we would recommend that this net not be approved. Or, once again, if the applicant could move the net further offshore to get outside of this area, I think we'd be okay with that. This is the net that was spoken to in one of the written comments. The concern was that the net blocks off this area between the beach and this sandbar, which as it moves further to the north actually comes to shore. And so you have this area up in here that, except at high tide, this access to this area would be blocked by the net, and that was a concern of one of the public commenters. The only other comment, the one about affecting fingerling trout, of course, you know, the mesh size of pound nets by law is 2-inch stretch measure, and fingerling trout ought to be able to escape through a mesh of that size. Obviously, the net will catch fish that are bigger than fingerling trout. But also to let you know, back in the Back in 1995, the commission did adopt a regulation that set aside four areas along these stretches of beach that were set aside for recreational trout fishermen. And gill nets and pound nets are not permitted to be set in those areas. They're heavy with SAV, and they're known speckled trout fishing areas. None of the nets are set, obviously, within those areas. This is net number four down here, and just to the south of this, this is Akahani Creek. One of the four speckled trout areas is just to the south of that net. And you can see that depicted in the last page of the evaluation. So that's where staff is coming from on this, and I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Questions of Mr. Travelstead by members of the commission. Mr. Robbins.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jack, if you move those nets, you talked about net one and net four, I believe possibly moving those offshore. If we did that, at that point you're outside of the bottom contours that are essentially involved with these sandbars. Is that going to put them in a position where they're more likely to interact with recreational boat traffic?
I'm sure it would, sure, because, you know, most of the traffic going up and down, those areas are, you know, obviously you can see the entrance here to Craddock, I guess this is Craddock Creek, whatever this creek is, you can see the deep water. You're coming in this way to get into the creek. If you move this net further offshore, you may impinge on boat traffic here. This one, probably to a lesser degree. Nobody's going to be coming. Anybody coming from the south is probably going to want to stay well clear of this area down here.
Jack, help me in that picture. Which one's two and three?
Two, three.
Okay.
There's one.
Mm-hmm.
And four.
Okay. What's the distance between two and three?
I don't know. It's pretty substantial.
Okay. I can ask. Questions, Mr. Travelstead? Mr. Fox, you have a question? Yes, sir.
Where is the Turner Cabin?
The Turner Cabin is somewhere. Let me go back to this so you can see it. Near number four. And I don't know where it is here on the land, but apparently.
Right. Hank, do you know where it is?
He's in Washington.
Okay, thank you.
In this area somewhere, Hank?
Further questions? Thank you, Mr. Travelstead. Is the applicant here or represented?
Yeah.
Come forward, please, sir. Couldn't see you for the monitor. Thank you. Good afternoon. Could you state your name for the record, please?
Andrew Sturgis.
Okay.
I'm just trying to make a living, and as far as the navigational hazard, it's several miles of bay, you know, you can go around it easily. And you know, they're saying about the recreational fishing, you know, messing that up. At the Chesapeake Bay Bridge Tunnel, that's the best recreational fishing place on the bay, and there's 50 pound nets there. So I can't see how it would ruin it.
Can I ask you a question? What's the distance between net two and three that Mr. Travelstead showed on the
two and three is probably a quarter of a mile, something like that.
Questions of Mr. Sturgis, Mr. Schick, please.
Would you have objections to moving those one and four out beyond the SAV area, like staff suggested?
Well, I'm not really sure about one, but I mean four, but one, if I move that out, it'd be right on a sandbar. There's no.
You have to move it out beyond the sandbar,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, I mean, it just out from the area would be right on the sandbar. There's no point putting it there.
But if you moved it out beyond the sandbar, would that be effective for you?
Possibly. Mm-hmm. But I really haven't looked at that because I wanted to put it, you know, where I'm applying for it. I mean, that's really where I want it, but, you know, if I can't, I'll work around.
Mr. Palmer?
If you did move number one on the other side of the bar, once you dropped off the edge of the bar, how deep is the water there?
I really don't know. Maybe 6 foot, maybe.
So it's still relatively shallow?
Yeah, it's still pretty shallow. Until you get, what you know, way off.
Right, as far as net number four goes, what's the boat traffic like in that area?
I see hardly any from what I gather, and it's not cutting off the cabin. To get to the cabin, you got to go in the main channel of the creek. The cabin's not. It's near the net in some way, but where they go to the cabin, you don't go by the net.
Have you seen them go to the cabin before?
Yeah.
How they do it?
Yeah. They go right up the main creek.
Mr. Travelstead?
When you say main creek, are you referring to this here? They're coming up?
The cabins look right here.
The cabin's way over here?
Yeah.
And so they're coming?
They're coming right in.
There's something says Turner right in front of us. That might be his lease. Is that?
There is a lease here. This is the Turner, mm-hmm. a Turner
right.
lease.
His cabin's right up in here.
Oh, just for the record, this is Mr. Hank Badger. Go ahead, Hank.
I'm sorry.
Go. To the mic.
To the mic.
He's got a cabin that's on the bayfront. He's got a observation cabin on the point. And this map's not a very good map. I'm kind of confused.
I didn't see any cabin where the net's going.
Excuse me.
Is a cabin 2 miles of beach.
There's a cabin on the waterfront there on the bayside that's farther up than number four. So you're thinking it's up beyond the map up
yes.
here.
Further questions?
Even,
Mr. Sturgis?
Even going, you know, like there's not going to be any poles other than the head of the trap. As far as going over the leader, I mean, if it came to that, they could lift up their motor and drift across it. It's not something that's going to stop you from going. You know, it's not going to be any poles other than at the very end.
Further questions, Mr. Palmer? Thank you.
That's all right. With net number four, the one we talked about with the Turner cabin, I got to be honest, if I was Mr. Turner and I wanted to get up to my place, the last thing I want to do is pull my engine up
yeah.
to slide over top of something, especially if it's nasty out. By the time you get the engine back down, you're up on the beach. How deep is the water between the bar and the beach right there?
It might be 7 foot on a really high tide, but probably 6 foot.
On a standard tide, like about 6 feet. Could you leave enough room between one end of the net or the other for him to get by
yeah.
without him having to lift his engine up and all?
Mr. Tankard?
Mr. Sturgis, I haven't been up in this area in some time. It used to be that where net number one is, or you proposed net number one, that was sort of a shortcut up to Craddock Creek inside that sandbar. It's all filled in
yeah,
now.
About maybe 150 yards past where the net is, it's filled right in. You can't,
that's not navigable.
Not even on high tide.
Okay.
Even with a small boat, you can't go.
Because that used to be pretty much
yeah, it used to be a slough all the way to Craddock.
Oh, yeah.
Even on low tide, you could run it, but not now. It's all filled in.
Okay.
Further questions of Mr. Sturgis? Thank you, sir. Anyone else here in support of this application? Anyone here object to this application?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Come forward, please, sir. You state your name for the record, please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Edwin J. O'Malley, Jr. My wife and I own the property at the mouth of Ocahontas Creek, some 400 acres. We've owned it for about 40 years. We've kept it pretty much undeveloped. We enjoy the sited natural resources and the navigation. We join in the objection of those who say that the net one and two would interfere with we'll call it coastwise, travel of small craft, not to mention, of course, you know, what aquatic life may or may not be impacted. It seems logical to me that anything that impacts upon the travel of fishes along the coast impacts upon the Ocahonda Creek ecosystem, but I rely upon your staff expert to evaluate that more precisely.
Thank you.
But, I'm providing more than anecdotal observations or objections. You know, I personally have used that water. I've seen Mr. Sturgis's existing net, and what I'm suggesting is that I endorse 100% Mr. Travelstad's recommendation that net number one not be granted, 100% grant that. And I don't quite agree with him as to net number two further up the same beach for the same reason. I think that it should either be eliminated or cut in half so it's like 700 feet offshore, just like Mr. Sturgis's existing net. That's a quick summary of, you know, where we see it. I have a couple of, I had prepared some comments, but a lot of them have been eclipsed by your staff's excellent review, so I'll try not to cover that again.
Thank you, sir.
But I have a question and observation. As I read the code, the permit, an application for a license to move for a pound net, to move a pound net, you have to own the pound net. That pound net has to be the subject of the application to be relocated. I see only the application form, which is, has certifications that I'll follow the law, et cetera, but it doesn't say I own a net or any description of it or where it was. It's silent. It would seem to me that due diligence on the part of the authority, the commission, would be to include at the time you take the application to get verification that you, all of these nets for which there's a permit sought to move them are owned. Your attorney will tell you, your own plain language reading will tell you. That is an unvariable section of the code. The language is clear. It keeps referring to that net. It means that owned net. I suggest is that owned net as of the time of the application. Now, if I'm wrong, fine. It's okay. In terms of if he owned them, I don't have a problem. If he didn't own them, I think we all have a problem. If he did not own them, I'm suggesting the application is fatally flawed. That's that technical point that I wanted to bring up. On the other hand, if he did own them, not a problem. I think then, in addition to the points that Mr. Travelstad made in how your commission evaluates this and other applications, I didn't hear any mention of the public trust doctrine.
Mm-hmm.
The public trust doctrine is mandated to be within the scope of the considerations that your commission will undertake. And I agree, in Virginia, it's a little fuzzy, it's a little tough, but certainly the bottom is in the public trust doctrine. Whether the fishery waters is in the public trust doctrine, I guess case law will spell that out for us. I don't know.
I think what the intent was when we developed the regulation, although we didn't exactly mirror Section 28.2.1205, which embodies and states under the public trust doctrine, I think the intent of what was undertaken by the formation of the regulation was in some way to if not directly relate to the public trust doctrine, to at least take in consideration all sides when coming to a decision as far as the user groups were concerned, which, of course, the public trust doctrine mandates.
And I understand that. And thanks for that.
Yes, sir.
Clarifying observation, right? But I'm suggesting that you need to really get into it. And getting into it means balancing the interest of private and public use of the public resource. So here, to me, it's not a hard case. First, let me interject this. I have no problem with commercial fishing, no problem with commercial fishermen. I represent, have represented for decades, a lot of commercial fishermen, not here, up that way, in the other part, and overseas. So there's no, a lot of empathy for that. But the reality to me here is a non-selective device catches everything. You got sea turtles to deal with. You've got bottlenose dolphin to deal with. It's not a happy scenario. You guys have a tough job.
But, Counselor, you know as well as I do, from a law-oriented perspective, that if that device is allowable by law, no problem, and it is, we really can't get into the efficacy of that specific device. We're here to decide.
I understand.
Thank you.
I understand that. So let's look further then at the scope of, I'm calling the magnitude of the Sturgis application. It has four pending and one already on the bottom. That's five. As I understand your code, and I'm certainly not an expert in it, but as I understand it, it not permitted for a member of the public, not a license holder, to fish within 125 feet of either side of a pound deck. So my simplistic view is I added up all the twine that he would put out there.
Yes, sir.
Was 3/4 of a mile. I multiply that by 250. I get 22 acres, not counting the bottom that he's using already. So maybe it's 25 acres he's using. Then you figure, and Mr. Travelson probably has a lot better idea how to do that, you know, how much of the actual water mass is he impacting? It could be hundreds of acres. It could be a lot more. This is one person with a giant drab at a giant resource. And I'm suggesting you guys are tasked with a tough job of balancing that interest against the public interest. So he says he needs to make a living. I'm 100% in favor of him making a living. That's not a problem. But you have thousands of other people who have to avail themselves or would like to avail themselves or may avail themselves of the public resource. So you've got to balance that. For me, I'm 100% endorsing Mr. Travelston's recommendation not to do the southernmost net for all the reasons mentioned. The existing net is there. So the next northerly one, for the same reasons that, or most of the same reasons that number one should not be allowed, I'm saying number two should basically be cut in half or moved offshore. I feel strongly about that. You guys have a very tough job, I know. I concede the importance of commercial fishing to the economy. That's not challengeable. Also, I would suggest, though, the recreational side of the economic equation for the Eastern Shore is very important. Right now, development is slow. Development will start up again. More people will go up and down the creek. More people will want to avail themselves of that resource. And the more stuff we put out there, the more impact we're going to have. So for all those reasons, I'm saying enough already. Let him have the one he's got. As far as the ones off the creek, off Craddock Creek, I am not sufficiently knowledgeable to have an opinion. I'll leave that to your good judgment. But I'm suggesting if he gets the one he has, and the two northerly ones, not a bad day's work. And I will compound your job, and I appreciate your diligence. And I did prepare a little exhibit, which I'd like to have marked for the record about.
Absolutely.
My hand you a copy? Or
yes, sir.
All in.
Sure may. Thank you. To be entered into the record. Absolutely. We'll spread them out.
Basically, this is an
keep
aerial.
One for yourself, for sure. Keep one for yourself, for sure. Yep.
This is an aerial which depicts the location of...
There you go. He's passing it on. And if you got... I'll mark this one, Kathy, for the record.
Depicts the location of next number one. And it shows that the third is existing. I think it's interesting, but it does again show how the bottom has stayed, where the bars are. But, you know, at half tide or better, a small boat can go all the way along that shore. You put that net number two up against the shore, can't go there.
These four.
Now, two, I don't see it a lot because I'm not down in the summer a lot, but I know that the general public uses that shore, that sandy shore, to go to the beach. If you have these nets right up against the shore, that's going to inhibit that. So, I could talk all day about it. I'm not angry about anything. I just want to try to help you guys make a decision. I urge that you not grant the application for one, and if you consider granting net number two, that it be significantly modified. And I thank you very much for your patience.
Thank you very much for your presentation. Any questions of the gentleman? Mr. Tankard has a question for you, sir. A
clarifying point. You mentioned that small boats do go up and down the shoreline, but you heard previous testimony by Mr. Sturgis that boats don't use.
Let me contradict that a little bit. About 6 weeks ago, my wife and I did go up and down that shore. Now, we did it in a kayak, to be truthful, but there's water to go there, and this is at low tide. And once the tide is up, I can run my outboard skiff up there, I believe. And it changes from year to year. Some years you go all the way up, some years you can't. But I still think there's a natural channel that wants to be there.
I'm sorry. Further questions of the gentleman? Sir, I want to thank you for a very good presentation.
Thank you, sir.
You're welcome to come before the commission anytime.
Appreciate it.
Yes, sir. Anyone else in opposition to the issue? Mr. Sturgis, you've got a couple minutes if you'd like to rebut anything, if you have anything else you'd like to say, or I'm sorry, Mr. Palmer?
So I'd like to ask Mr. Sturgis a question.
Mr. Sturgis, could you come forward, please? Mr. Palmer has a question for you.
Mr. Sturgis, have you had an opportunity to see this map that we were just given?
I've seen some aerials, but not that one.
There you go. Do you have a question you want? You can go ahead and take a copy. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to drop it on you.
Question regarding this. So this shows your existing pound net, and the existing pound that you have is already on the outside of the bar. Am I correct?
Yes.
The net that I'm looking off to the right, which number net is that? Is that number one?
Yes.
And is there difficulty moving that one offshore? I know you got to change the lat longes on it, but is there any difficulty?
Well,
will it be too close to number one?
The one that's already existing, just to the right of it, that's kind of where the bar ends.
Right.
Past that is kind of just open water. It's a little bit of sand, but it's not like a funnel point for
right.
the fish. So that's why I had it on the inside.
How far offshore do you have to bring that net to get it away from the SAV bed?
I really don't know. Probably a couple hundred yards, maybe.
Would it be possible to do that?
I guess it could be. I really don't know. You know, I'd have to look at it, look more into it. Because, this is where I look for, so that's what I was concentrated on.
Okay.
I really didn't look around it.
Further questions of Mr. Sturgis? Mr. Fox?
The net that's on the left of this drawing that you have, would it be trouble to move the point that's on the beach, move that out a little bit?
Yeah, I probably could. But the... maybe on a. I know with my boat, I got a 19-foot Carolina skiff, and it's got power trim and tilt and everything. On low tide, I can't go up there. On a high tide, I can't. Unless I tilt it up and slow down.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a big travel course there. It's not enough water.
Spum.
Yes, sir.
Plumman? Thank you. What sites are you moving the nets from?
What do you mean?
Where are these nets coming from?
These are just new locations.
They're new locations.
That I'm applying for.
These are new nets?
Yes.
General, what was the answer to that question?
These are new nets.
Have you already purchased the sites, sir, or gotten the sites?
No, because you have to get the site approved before you buy the license. I'm applying for a new stand, they call it.
Mr. Travelstead?
How did you get the four locations? How did you get the four nets?
I'm
did
applying.
You get them in the lottery? In the lottery?
No.
You bought the nets from someone else?
No, I'm applying. I have one, but I'm applying for a new location. That's how you...
Where did you get the licenses? The potential to have the licenses from?
Well, they told me on the Eastern Shore that... it's like you can have 200 in the state,
yeah.
And whoever's turning them back in or whatever, that's what I'm applying for to get four of them.
So you haven't even gotten nets from, you haven't won nets through the lottery?
No, they didn't tell me anything like that.
Mr. O'Reilly has a...
We're wasting our time.
Mr. O'Reilly, you have a comment?
Well, just one comment. Dr. Barth usually is the point of contact for these, and each year, even after the lottery, which is January 3rd,
mm-hmm.
there are leftover nets. So there are additional
right.
nets. The last several years,
you get them
there have
the
been
lottery.
Nets,
you get them
even
the
after the lottery.
But you're saying you have? Did you put in for nets in the lottery?
No.
So
they didn't tell me any of that.
Yeah, I'm not even sure why he's going through this exercise if he doesn't have the nets. The only way you can, there's a cap on the number of nets. You can buy a net from someone and then move its location. So you have eligibility to buy that license. You have to get approval from the commission for the new location. Now there are folks who don't set their nets and they lose their priority right.
I'm familiar with.
In which case they're vacant and people can come in and make application for them. If we have multiple applications, then there's a lottery, and those are assigned to the winners of the lottery, in which case they can put the net back to its original location, or they can apply to you to set the net in a new location and go through this process. Mr.
Sturgis hasn't done any of that. He's anticipating, I guess.
That's what they told me.
Getting nets through the lottery.
Okay. Well, you know, in this situation, as agency head, I could say we're going to set the matter down. You can go have a conference with both the people outside and then just kind of blow right on by it. It's evident to me that we as an agency did not do due diligence to find out his eligibility prior to going through this exercise. Is that correct?
Sounds like to me.
We have, in all due respect, made a mistake. Just a second, sir. I think counsel's points brought rise to ponder the question that arose as far as ownership and such. So I will tell you that we had for what it's worth, we had a meeting about 6 to 8 weeks ago, maybe longer, where we went over line by line, item by item, any potential issue that may come up after we had some issues with previous PowerNet licenses. I thought that we had done due diligence because, quite honestly, I sat in on the meeting. I was there. We decided what each individual piece of information needed to be derived in order to make determination. We even put in safeguards to make sure that we didn't rely on the applicant's indication where the location would be. We even set about sending our surveyors out there to make sure that there was no ifs, ands, or buts about it. Members of the commission, something fell through the cracks. And in this situation, I think it's come forward, and we need to go back to the drawing board because we have expended a significant amount of time and effort to bring this project to you by missing a point. And all I can tell you is this, that I apologize for us taking the commission's time, and it will not happen again. With that, Mr. Travelstead, you can explain to Mr. Sturgis what's going on, or Mr. O'Reilly can. Counselor, at the present time, this matter will be set down as a moot issue at this point because of ineligibility, and until something changes, and if it does, you will be notified forthwith. It could possibly, should he, I would rather, Mr. He could be, and I'll let staff explain to you the lottery issue and things like that because I want you to have a full understanding. I just appreciate your understanding, you coming, and you doing a very good job. And Mr. Sturgis, you're owing an apology, too, because we didn't tell you ahead of time what the criteria was. We were both under a mutual assumption that everything was according to whole. Counselor, have I missed anything?
I don't think so, Commissioner.
They told me.
Yep. Has he paid any fees as far as applications are concerned at this point? No fees. Thank you. Mr. Palmer.
First of all, I want to wish Mr. Sturgis best of luck in the lottery. I hope he gets his nets. You've heard the concerns about nets number 1 and 4.
Right.
You might want to reevaluate the positions of those nets and get the new lat lounges for them prior to that, and hopefully that will eliminate a lot of your problems.
Okay. Mr. Plumlee, did you have an issue?
No, sir.
I'm sorry. Further comments?
Mr. Chairman,
Ms. Counsel? The application at the present time will be considered null and void.
Okay, that could never happen.
Yes, sir. Well, I'm not considering that it never happened because if we did that, then we haven't done due diligence as an agency. I think at the present time, based on lack of eligibility, the applications are null and void, with apologies to all parties involved. Mr. Tankard.
Mr. Commissioner, I just see the father, Mr. Sturgis, in the background. I thought perhaps
he... Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, sir. I'm sorry.
I think I can clear up a little bit of this. Mr. Gar.
Can you come up for me, please?
And say your name.
And state your name for the record, sir.
Hey, Todd. Andrew's father. Mr. Garth, is that the name that I heard, or Barth?
Barth.
Barth. I called him and asked him what the procedure was in getting a PowerNet license and if there were any permits available, and he told me it's 200 a year or 168. Okay. There were 10 available right now, and he asked me, how many do you want? I said, well, my son would like to apply for 4. He said, no problem. Have the site approved, and then they're yours.
Okay.
So
we'll look into that. And that, once again, that just falls right in line with my acknowledgement that something slipped through the cracks.
Or, So well, that's the procedure.
We'll work with all involved to make sure that this is this matter's taken care of, and if it deserves another hearing, all involved will be a, it'll be a public notice just like we did before. And I apologize for the inconvenience.
Okay.